Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Good evening, and welcome to the VR.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to the VRO. Tonight is Wednesday, December 5th, 2012. My name is Lynn, and I will be guest hosting tonight. We also have Jessica with us on the switchboard. Our very special guest tonight is Mr. Daniel Gillies. Daniel stars as Elijah on The Vampire Diaries and also as Dr. Joel Goren on Saving Hope. In addition, Daniel just recently released online his very own amazing movie that he wrote, directed, and stars in called Broken Kingdom. We are currently waiting for Daniel to call in, so hopefully he'll be on the line with us very shortly. So, Jessica?
Yes. Well, hello, Lynn, and congratulations on your very first intro. You did a very good job on that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I see some people that I know in the chat room. I see Rin. I haven't seen Rin online forever since True Blood, back when I was hosting with Justin. But anyway, it's nice to see her in the chat room, and I see Too Many Canines in there, and people are starting to log into the chat room as we talk. Lynn Rin saying, what's up, Jess?
Yes, she just tweeted a minute ago saying that she was impatiently waiting.
Yes. Well, we are hoping that Daniel has remembered to call in. If not, then we will reschedule, and it's certainly not intentional on his part. He has a lot going on. So we're going to wait a couple minutes, maybe 10, 15 minutes, and just talk about ourselves and what's going on and interact with the chat room until I see his number pop up on my switchboard, and if it doesn't happen by then we'll just contact him separately and see if we can reschedule for another night. But Lynn is the one that actually wound up booking this interview, so congratulations to you. Good for you.
Thank you to Daniel. I mean, he has always been just such a gentleman, so sweet and so very accommodating with things like this. He's so wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, from meeting him at ICON events and things like that, he's always wanted to stay a little bit longer at events and likes to interact with fans, and I believe this might be him. So I'm going to screen this real quick, and maybe you can tell everybody what specifically you want to talk about with Daniel while I'm doing that. Hold on 1 second.
Okay, sure. Well, we are going to be speaking about his various roles that he has right now, which, of course, are Elijah and Dr. Goren, Joel Goren, and then also his movie, Broken Kingdom, which I know he is very proud of, and rightfully so, because it's an amazing movie. And if any of you haven't seen it yet, up in the top where the Variety Radio Online logo is, in the little paragraph there, the intro paragraph, we have the link to download his movies. You can watch them streaming online, or you can download them and keep them forever. And it's just $5 or $8 for both Broken Kingdom and Kingdom Come, which is the documentary that tells about all the problems that they had raising funding and everything in order to get Broken Kingdom made. It was really an eye-opener watching that. So,
hey, Lynn, I have Amy, who's just called in, so she's going to chat with you. I have another call in here. I'm going to screen it and see if it's Daniel.
Okay.
Hey, hello, Lynn. Hi. So our boy's late.
Yes, he is, but, you know, he's
That's
a busy
okay.
guy. So.
Exactly. So we'll give him that.
Yes.
So, listeners, if Lynn didn't give you any background on who she is basically Daniel's social media PR? Is that what I have to call you? Because, I mean, you do a lot, like, everything for Broken Kingdom, I learned from you. So I was like, who else to do this interview than Lynn, you know? So everybody in the chat room, and if you're listening in archive, you better be good to my girl Lynn, and I mean
Hey, guys, Daniel is attempting to call in. He's tried to call in several times. His phone seems to be having technical difficulties. So he keeps popping up and then dropping off again. I did speak to him very briefly, and then the call got cut off. So he has not forgotten about us. He's just trying to get into us.
Okay, well, that's good to know. He's trying. He didn't forget. Yay!
Right. So I'll be popping in and out depending on if I can get him on the switchboard, but I'm still watching.
Okay. Okay. And thank you, Amy. That was very sweet of you.
Well, true, Lynn. It's true.
Oh, Daniel knows he's one of my favorite people in the entire world. So I try to keep up with everything that goes on with him and help him out whenever I can.
Definitely. Jess, are you still there, babe? She might be in a screening with Daniel. I was seeing if Jess was still there because I'm actually on the road, and I was going to, because Jess is running the switchboard tonight, I was going to tell her if he's having trouble calling in, then maybe we can call him from the switchboard.
Oh, okay. That would be good.
So, yeah. So, see,
she's there saying,
okay, guys, I have Daniel. He has finally made it in. I'm going to put him on right now, okay?
Okay.
Here he is.
Hello, Daniel.
Hi there.
How are you tonight? This is Lynn.
Hi, Lynn. How's it going?
It's going very well. How's it going for you? I'm glad we were able to get you online.
I know. I'm sorry. I ended up calling from my car. I'm very proud of. I just got a new vehicle, and I was trying to do the hands-free thing because I was thinking I was stuck in traffic. But I was like, you know, I can do this from here. So I tried, and it was miserable. It kept not quite going through, and then going through, and then dropping me from the queue, and I don't know what was happening. Anyway, we're here now, so that's good.
Yes, that's what matters. Technology can be great sometimes, but at other times it can just be a pain.
You bet.
Okay, well, I already gave our little introduction of you, saying that, you know, you star not only as Elijah on The Vampire Diaries, but you're Dr. Joel Goren on Saving Hope, and that you just recently released online your movie that you wrote, directed, and star in, that amazing movie, Broken Kingdom. So,
well, thank you for giving me such a thorough intro.
Oh, you're very welcome. So how are you tonight?
I'm good. I'm sort of busy. I've been running around LA just trying to get. It's funny, you know. We live very blessed lives, my wife and I, but we're rarely in town. So when we get back to town, it's just you just end up trying to get together all of the stuff that falls by the wayside when you're not in town. But at any rate, we seem to be getting on top of it, or at least I'm deceiving myself that we are. I'm deluding myself that we have any kind of. I've got guests coming around in a couple of hours, and I haven't even started cooking. But I'm going to pretend that's not happening for the next 20 minutes or so.
Well, that's good. Okay, so you're in a hurry, then we won't try to.
No, I'm not in any hurry. I'm yours for the next half an hour, I think. I think I'm fine. They're not arriving for another hour and a half. So as long as they get an hour, I'm gonna be fine. I'm gonna wing it. I think you and I both know that I'm calling a takeout number anyway. Like I'm not cooking anything. Nobody's fucking cooking anything. I'm calling a number. It's gonna be Pollo Loco. Who cares? You know.
That sounds like a good option.
Yes.
Okay, so I was going to open with, you know, asking the big, hard question first, if you were wearing pants, since you seem to have such an aversion to them on Twitter, but since you're driving, I guess you don't have much of a choice.
You know what? I'm back at home right now. And the answer to that, if you were going to ask if I was wearing pants at the time, I never wear pants while driving. It's just, that's pointless. first of all. But also too, it's, but I actually do I do this martial arts thing called Muay Thai actually, and during the days I tend to train. And I'm not kidding. I actually despise pants. Like after I train, because I do wear pants, but it's these terrible sort of boxer, not boxer shorts, but shorts for boxers, you know. And it's the people are so gross post workout. Why am I talking about this? I don't know. There's a degree of shame when you've just purchased a new vehicle, and I was just driving home, and I was like, I've ruined this car already. Like I've already ruined it. Like I got three big dogs, and they've just like they've put their hair and slobber and you know, and into every cranny and nook of that vehicle. And now I'm just thinking it up. It's the worst. I don't know. Luckily, it looks like it can take a punishing. So I'll just have to drive with the windows down or something.
Well, congratulations on your new car, and it's just getting broken in. That's all.
But yeah, I guess so. It's weird. It's actually shaped. It's like a boat. It's actually it's not really a car. It's more like a hovercraft. It has a.
Really?
It's like a Yeah, I don't know. Somebody made a car out of a boat, like a long. I think it was an old tugboat, and I just thought, oh, that'd be cool. That's kind of original. So I thought, I mean, and that looks like it can take some wear and tear with the dog. So I'm driving around a small tugboat.
That sounds very interesting.
Well, it's more like a dinghy that somebody put, you know, some wheels under it. I don't know if it even works. It doesn't even really have an engine. I cut some holes in the floor, like, so I'm like a Flintstone. I basically put my feet through the hole and I propel myself along like that. It's Rachel's not crazy about it. I'll be honest with you, she's not crazy about it, especially because I sold the house in order to buy it. But I had to have it. It was one of those impulse buys. I was like, babe, we're going to look back at this and laugh. So she's left me. She's left me on account of this car that I just got. It's shaped like a boat.
Oh my goodness. Well, we're getting all kind of scoop tonight, aren't we?
Well, it's just, yeah. I'm sort of permanently high.
Okay. Well, so I really want to give you the chance to talk about Broken Kingdom to everyone that's listening. So... can you give us, just for those, you know, poor souls out there who haven't seen it yet, can you give just, first of all, a quick summary of the plot?
Absolutely. Broken Kingdom follows two stories, two major narratives. One is the story of this ostracized, vaguely eccentric American writer living in Bogota, Colombia. You don't know precisely why he's there, but you know that he's running away from his life. And you know that he also has writer's block. And one night he happens upon this incident, which is this 14-year-old prostitute girl who's, you know, sort of besieged by this attack in the streets of Bogota. And he sort of rescues her. And in an inadvertent sort of way, this girl, they develop a relationship, he and this prostitute, and they sort of she becomes his muse, and he sort of hires her, not for sexual purposes, but rather for reasons that become clear as the movie progresses, but chiefly that she sort of enables him to be able to find his art again. And then the movie kind of cuts from there to Los Angeles, and there is a story between a daycare center teacher, played by this gorgeous actress whose name I cannot remember right now, but she sort of becomes a little bit obsessed with an African American boy in her class, and you don't know precisely why. She actually becomes intertwined with the child's father and ends up sort of dating him. And it's this weird sort of study of obsession in these two different worlds, and kind of it sort of compares and contrasts them, looking at loss and innocence and love, and sort of asks, basically the movie, as the movie unfolds, you're sort of privy to the secrets which seem to be weighing upon the protagonists.
Right. Okay. Well,
having seen the film a number of times now, I can tell you it amazes me each time, watching Kingdom Come as well, the documentary about the making of it, how you made this film on less than $1 million.
Oh, much less than $1 million. You know, and I think that that's where the most interesting films are getting made right now. I really do. You know, I'm eager to see, for example, like, you know, Django Unchained, this Tarantino film, because you know, a lot of people are telling me that it's just horrific, that it's terrible, you know, and it's just we're in a period where people are making gimmicks now. They're not really making films that mean anything, and I'm very very proud of the fact that we decided to go and do this film, especially because it was a huge sacrifice to step away. Certainly from my acting career, and, you know, and also, which was my bread and butter, you know, like I really sort of made a decision not to earn any money, like, and luckily I had been working at the time, so I had enough to healthily survive the first year and a half, but, you know, it was just, I needed to make something because I was becoming that bitchy actor that was talking about how terrible movies were, but I wasn't doing anything about it, and I'm proud of the film. I think it has a real heart, you know, and it actually sort of says something about the world in which we live, rather than these gimmicky sort of movies that are just purely for entertainment. I'm not sure that I'm a believer in entertainment for the sake of entertainment. If you're going to do that, I really recommend going and playing video games. But I actually think that there's a part of people that resonates with stories that touch the heart, because, you know, I almost think that people feel good about themselves once they've emerged from a movie where they were emotionally challenged. They don't like going into them, but when they come out, they feel, you know, it's like Hitchcock said. Hitchcock would often say that women would often describe, you know, after coming out of a movie theater, they would describe a movie and say to their friend, for example, look, I had a really good cry. They described a cry as a good cry. They pinned that adjective to it, you know. And Hitchcock would, you know, sort of explore that. He'd say, now, what is a good cry? You know, it's an interesting thing. And I'm similarly fascinated that we, you know, that we can go and I think there's something cathartic about watching people in the dark and or wherever you watch it. Now you can watch it on your laptop, your phone if you want, but to sit with characters, to be near them, to watch their lives, to watch their crisis or crises, as the case may be, and undergo their dilemmas at the price of nothing really for yourself, like nothing from your own life is penalized other than time, and to emerge kind of having learned something emotionally because of, I think it's very special what we do, and I think the movies are... I really do feel like that, you know, just generally speaking, it's a circus out there, and a lot of things are falling into a kind of decay that upsets me. But I'm proud of that as a first film. I'm certainly looking forward to making the next 1, 2, 3, 4, however many I can make, and that'll be as many as I can make before I go, really.
Well, and that's something we very much look forward to. Can you give us any hints about what your next project will be?
I can't. I'm writing 2 at the moment, and really it's just going to be the one that I can kind of get greenlit first, the one that I can find financing for first. I'm writing 2, and they're both, you know, relatively challenging dramas. One of the stories is slightly more genre-based in that it's like a psychological thriller. So it actually, you know, it has a lot more, I guess, of the bells and whistles that your traditional commercial films might have, but I can't really say too much more about it than that. And it's, you know, in all likelihood, that'll probably be financed before my other piece, which is sort of saying, you know, talking a lot about man and the universe and things that people tend to steer away from because they don't want to be challenged when they go to the movies. But that said, there are some amazing talents in this world. I'm not like saying that, you know, there aren't incredible filmmakers out there. Like, you know, you just have to look to a Paul Thomas Anderson or, you know, a Gaspar Noé or, you know, a Wong Kar-wai or a Jacques Audiard. There are people in the world who are making great films. It's just, you know, it's funny. Someone said to me the other day, a friend of mine who works for a major studio here, and that sounded name droppy, but it's true. Like, you know, a guy said, you know, people don't trust their own taste anymore. It used to be that there were guys at studios who would kind of call the shots, you know, who would say, I think we should green light this. I think we should finance this because I think that this is a great movie and I'm not entirely sure whether or not it's going to make its money back or whether it's going to make money. And sure, it's a business, you know, people want to make their money back. But I believe in this film. Well, nobody knows anymore. Like, people think, well, if it's got The Rock in it, and if we spend this amount of money and we do this much PNR, and if we do, you know, and if somebody does a sex tape and somebody's on Leno fucking doing, you know, making fart sounds with their hands, then, you know, it's just, there's any number of sort of ingredients to an equation that gets fed into this nonsensical graph. And then you have, there's just no such thing as a shoo-in. I mean, Brad Pitt just made his second film with Andrew Dominik, you know. The first was Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford. And his last one is Killing Him Softly, you know, which just released, and both of which tanked. I mean, this is Brad Pitt. He is the biggest movie star in the world. There's no such thing as a shoo-in. Like, people don't want to go to a movie that they're not certain that they know exactly what they're getting, and we're not encouraging them to either. We're culturally not telling, encouraging people to into an experience. What's happened is, I think what's emerging now, and what I find fascinating, and boy, I'm talking long here, aren't I? What I'm finding interesting emerging is some of the best indie writing in the business right now is surfacing out of cable network television. You know, like you've got, whether it be Showtime, FX, HBO, or, you know, these shows like, you know, be it a Boardwalk Empire or a Breaking Bad or a Mad Men, you know, there are these stunning shows that are demonstrating the kind of prowess, individuality, and independence that film used to have. And I think some of the greatest talents in the business right now are in television, if I'm honest with you.
That's true. There is a lot out there on cable right now.
I mean, just stunning shows that are taking risks. Especially, you know, sort of led by HBO, which kind of created its name, you know, beneath the banner of things like, you know, Sopranos and Six Feet Under, and you know, it's just gone on to do. It just moves from strength to strength as a network because it's just brave. Like, it says, why don't we try this? Why don't we try this? Let's take a look at this. Like, they're not about doing tried and true. What's stunning too is, like, cable networks are getting the kind of numbers. Numbers being ratings and number of people watching, you know, the film. Sorry, the episodes, as major networks are, which are for free. You know, it's startling to me. So people would rather, you know, it's got to be disturbing, like NBC, ABC, CBS. It's got to be disturbing to them because they've got to be thinking, people aren't paying, and. People are paying, rather. You know, it might just be a little bit, but they're paying to see television, which is great. You know, it's like people would rather pay just a little bit more to get
extra,
so much more.
Right.
You know.
Right. They don't have the lockup on all the good television that's out there anymore on the network.
Absolutely, and it's a good thing that power is taken away, because. The moment we're sort of controlled, you need a kind of an anarchy, and man, there's a beautiful anarchy happening in television. It's going through a golden period.
Well, speaking of that, I hope one of those networks out there, cable, whatever, picks up Saving Hope again for season two in the U.S. because I was very upset to see it canceled at the end of season one.
I mean, look, good shows get canceled all the time, and I was very proud of that show. I think that was it Breaking Bad? No. You know, was it Was it Game of Thrones? Absolutely not. You know, was it some, you know, stylistically, had we seen it before in some ways? Yeah, we definitely had. I'm not going to stand there and say this is the most unique piece of work I've ever seen in my life. What I will say, though, was it was beautifully executed. Like, it was a beautifully executed show, and it was really good, and it was better than most procedurals that are out there right now. It just had no backing. Like, NBC decided that they didn't want to support the show. For whatever reason, they made a decision not to put any money into advertising it. I mean, my wife and I had shows coming out at the same time, you know, and I sound like such a brat when I say something like that, but my wife and I had, she had Perception coming out, and I had Saving Hope, and, you know, and I was up shooting Saving Hope in Canada, and I was like, babe, what are they doing in L.A.? Are they doing anything in L.A.? Because there was nowhere you could turn in Canada where my hideous face wasn't plastered to a wall. I was everywhere I went, like there were trams, buses, taxi cabs. It was like my goofy idiot mask was like kind of grinning, half like just shit eating. I was a moron plastered all over the city of Toronto. But the point I'm making is, everywhere I looked, they were advertising in Canada, and it was number one in Canada. Now, you know, that might sound like a ludicrous assertion, like, oh, number one in Canada, who gives a shit? But there's a reason, like, you know, what they invested, they got back, and they got higher numbers for that drama than they've had for anything, like, ever. It broke every record, you know, and it didn't break every record because they'd spent that much money. They broke every record because they got word out there, because they really, really believed in it. And they so that departure between E1, the, you know, the Canadian investors, and NBC was kind of, it was mutual. Neither of them really wanted to work with each other again. They decided halfway through, you know. And what incredibly too, like, even though our numbers were not strong to begin with, we were growing from week to week and on NBC. And normally, when a show begins with that little advertising, they get, I don't know, 3 or 4 million the first week, and then they just die, you know, the next week. And we didn't. We wouldn't die, you know, and they could see that we were slowly growing, but that it was probably going to take another season almost in order to get the kind of viewership that they needed, and they just, they didn't want to wait that long. So they pulled us off after episode 10, which was sort of bizarre because we're only two from the end, and, you know, whatever. It's neither here nor there now. I certainly wasn't angry about it. Look, you know, every year hundreds of pilots get made, hundreds, you know, and a handful get picked up to go to series. You know, just like I mean, it's something like 1%, you know, of shows get picked up, of the hundreds of pilots I make every year. So first of all, you know, this is how difficult it is to be an actor in this climate. You got to get a show. Your show's got to get picked up. Your show's got to make it to second season. You know, the fact that something like The Vampire Diaries is on season 4 now, and there's no question they'll be in season 5 and 6. You know, that's the holy grail. It's very difficult to achieve that, you know. And a lot of times it's just, you know, it's a number of sort of prerequisites, but not the least of which is, like, having a network behind you that really believes in it. And I think that's why CW is exceptional. They don't take anything on that they don't want to support with all of their hearts, you know. And I think NBC was just sort of floundering. And frankly, I don't understand how networks work. It's not my domain, nor is it my expertise. But I still, I still really believe in Saving Hope. And look, you know, we got picked up for another 18. E1 has decided to finance it again. They're going to try and find a home with another network in the United States. I don't know who that'll be. I have no idea who that'll be. I know that there are several parties that are swimming around and that are interested. We'll just see. Like, you know, I'm contractually bound to go back there, and I won't go back till March or so. And in the meantime, I guess I'll do some Vampire Diaries. And we'll see what happens.
That sounds wonderful. Now, evidently, Saving Hope is doing something right, being moved from 13 to 18 episodes, and it just debuted in Italy this week, and rave reviews from what I saw on Twitter.
So I know. I have not, you know, I'm terrible. Like, as you probably noticed, I'm I barely get on Twitter these days. When I'm back in LA, I tend to put my head down and write, you know. But I've got to jump on. But somebody told me that it had aired in Italy, and I was curious to see how it went, you know.
It went well, according to all the Twitter feedback. It went very well.
I wonder how it went. This is so statistical of me. I wonder how it went with the ratings. Anyway,
but I'm sure that'll come out soon.
Yeah, you know what? I'll hit you up, Lynn. I'll find out what the hell's going on in the world. You seem to always be on the pulse of it. So, like, trust me, you'll be getting an obnoxious call from me. How do we do in Italy? How do we do in Italy? Anyway, I'm going to stop talking because I'm growing nauseous at the sound of my own voice.
Oh, are you okay?
No, just because I'm going to let you guys talk for a while because I'm super bored of me.
Let us talk for a while. No, we never get tired of hearing you, ever. So you should know that. Well, I have to throw some Vampire Diaries in here, you know, because you have such an enormous fan base for that show for Elijah. I mean, he is such an epic character. So
who plays Elijah? Doesn't Paul Wesley play Elijah? Oh, no, I play Elijah. That's right, sorry.
Yes, your character, remember that guy? We haven't seen him in a while.
He's splendid. I love Elijah. He's the wig specialist. I like that character.
Well, so do a lot of people. You are not alone in that. So I don't know if you've been keeping up with the show since you haven't been on it, but Elena is now a vampire. Okay, well, I know that one thing that you've always said in interviews when asked how Elijah feels about Elena is that he values her humanity and how she is such a strong person and everything, being human amongst all these, you know, people with supernatural powers and everything. So what do you think is going to change? How do you think it's going to change how he feels about Elena with her being a vampire now when he finds that out?
Look, she's sexy no matter what. I think maybe before it was just kind of like a fascination from afar, like admiring a sort of a fragile ice sculpture, like looking at a human being. But now he's like, all right, she's kind of bulletproof. It's open season now. They're going to be dating. They'll be dating by the end of next season. You watch.
Elijah.
I think Elijah needs pocket squares this season. I think I'm going to give him some pocket squares. See if I don't know about a carnation. I think I might be overdoing it. I don't want him to look like he's going to prom, but he certainly. I wonder what haircut he's going to have next, or what beard I can grow for him. I think Elijah needs a beard. I imagine if Elijah had a dreaded. I like the idea of Elijah with a Jack Sparrow beard, maybe some beads. And then we'll see how Vampire Elena responds to that. See, she needs rugged. Everybody looks too beautiful in that show. And this is why I've kept my job. And I also, because you walk in, people are like, oh, finally somebody like normal looking. I can relate to him. And people are always like congratulating me on like the superb acting. I think it's really just that they're like, great. Like that looks like a dude I knew who I kind of might have teased in high school. Anyway, here he comes. Oh, yep, he's being obnoxious. There we go. And that's it. Done. And then just take the applause, and we're out. I promise you. Well, I don't promise anything, but I'd love to do beaded beard. I don't know where that came
that
from.
That would be different. I was going to ask you if you could pick any time period or location for a flashback scene for the originals, what would it be? But it sounds like it would be some kind of pirate scene.
No, I would pick about 45 minutes ago in the traffic I was sitting in, you know, driving all the vampires in my new boat car. And I'd be telling them, you know, I'd be telling them to step on it a little bit so I can get back here and be on time with my interview. rather than holding good, decent people up like yourselves. You got to see my boat car. I don't have a boat car. I just want you to like me. And truthfully, I wanted to impress you. I don't have a boat car, but Rachel is leaving me. That's not a mistake, because I did more.
Well,
than enough. I've been betting a lot on Greyhounds these days. I'm not talking about the buses.
Yeah, I already know there's no possibility of Rachel leaving you. You two are wonderful together. Such an amazing couple.
That and the fact that I had implanted one of those electronic ankle bracelets, you know, signal things. She gets an electrical charge if she leaves the property without my knowing or without my authority. It's a weird kind of jurisdiction. It's a New Zealand thing. We implant into the ankle. It's a small voltage thing. It's not like I'm not hurting. It's not abuse. It just lets her know you cannot leave this property, this premises, without me knowing. So you're quite right. She can't. I wouldn't call it slavery, but it's definitely there's a degree of control that I like to have, and I think every husband should have. $49.99. You can buy them from any spy shop. Incredible.
Kind of like one of those electric dog shock collars.
Well, kind of, yeah, except it comes in the form of an adorable anklet, there's a little aspect to it that looks like a troublesome clasp, and then it just inserts itself like teeth in the ankle. That's it. It's there. You can't get it out. It's like the barb of a bee sting almost. It's in. It doesn't really hurt the victim too much. They feel horrendous pain, but it doesn't hurt me. The guy who purchased it, so that's the most important thing, I think.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, as long as you at least get it in, you know, designer colors and stuff.
It's gorgeous. No, it looks like, no, I think it was Ralph Lauren who actually sort of painted the first couple. They were for sort of... They were sort of like a fun party favor. He was sort of giving out in gift bags and these sort of Parisian soirees. But I don't know. But yeah, apparently he designed the first one, which they look amazing. Although mine had an Yves Saint Laurent logo on it, so I don't know what
yours. Maybe
maybe there's some sort of some mimicry going on in the fashion world. I don't know.
So you mean you have one too? You said yours.
Oh, no. Well, by mine, I mean the one that I purchased for Rachel. I would never put anything so ghastly on my any part of my body, just because of the searing pain alone. I couldn't do it. Anyway.
Okay. Well, now you've gotten me so totally off track, I just don't know if I can ask a serious question.
Trust me. Now, I'll answer a serious one as seriously as possible.
Okay, here's a good question. Tom Selleck, mm-hmm. What's the fascination with him?
Well, I want to ask you a question to that question. What's not the fascination with him? let's just take one good look at him. He's everything a guy should be. He's got, he's like, what, he's 6'3", he's the handsomest guy we've ever seen. He drives around in a Ferrari in the 80s, which we all know was amazing, where nothing had any consequences, where everybody was kind of rich. He works for some sort of stuffy old curmudgeon called Higgins, although there's apparently this authoritarian figure who owns the ranch that he works for called Robin Masters, who we never see. Mystery, hello, I love you. He's always kind of getting the girl, and... He's kind of like this contemporary Indiana Jones, which, ironically enough, he was cast as originally. He was the original Indiana Jones. Did you know that? Tom Selleck was originally cast as Indiana Jones. You know why he couldn't do it?
Why?
He couldn't do Indiana Jones, Lynn. He could not do Indiana Jones because he was contractually bound to Magnum P.I. Now, any man who does Magnum P.I., and first of all, I'm just going to say this. Here comes some potty mouth stuff coming your way. I say fuck Indiana Jones. fuck Indiana Jones. Magnum PI would crush Indiana Jones. You know, those shorts pulled up to, I mean, beyond his nipples. Like any man who can withstand that kind of, you know, that's beyond. That's almost like a male chastity belt. It's so far up to and beyond his nipples. Like there are octogenarians, you know, living in retirement homes on the outskirts of Redondo Beach who've never ever had their pants that high. Anyone who could withstand that kind of pain, it's like a denim diaper. He's phenomenal. Like it's that alone. He's always kind of like, you know, he's always in a kind of pain, which I think is amazing. On top of that, he's got like the best voiceover of all time. And for as rugged and handsome as he is, he always plays sort of this goofy aspect of himself. Like he's never, like whatever situation he's in, he tries to find a way to play it like an anti-hero, like a guy. Like he finds a really true way into the scene. He's got a slightly high voice, which is seems a little weird for a guy that is kind of, again, rugged, handsome. You know, have I mentioned that he's handsome so far?
Yeah.
He's just like, I'm not saying I want him to be my dad necessarily, but there was some part of my childhood where I did, if I'm honest with you, I did have fantasies regularly where he was my father. Anyway, back to topic. I mean, I can go on and on. You know, this is a shopping list for me. He always was self-deprecating. And so even in these moments, which made you feel even closer to him as a protagonist, go back and look at his performances. Like, pull up any scene. He's so good and so funny in scenes where if you just listen to the raw dialogue, they're not very particularly well-written scenes. But his interpretation of that dialogue is always so sublime and magnificent and transcendent beyond anything that Magnum PI was offering. He's just tremendous. And then don't even get me. You can't even begin to talk about his moustache. It's like talking about his moustache is like trying to talk about brush strokes in the Mona Lisa. It's like you can't actually tell a person what makes the Mona Lisa wonderful. You just kind of have to see it. Like it's like, oh yeah, it is a miracle when I see it. Like I'm not going to try and explain, you know, the kind of DNA that creates that, the kind of lip that has to support that. It's just, it's like watching a Pegasus take flight, that mustache.
That's pretty impressive. Have you watched his new show, the Jesse Stone, that he appears in every now and then?
No, I haven't.
Fanboy.
Here's the reason why. I'm disappointed that he didn't make an appearance on that show as Magnum. I kind of want him to be Magnum in every show. He's truly magnificent. Is it Blue Bloods? I was watching. He's terrific. I actually kind of, in all truth, would like to meet him. Not necessarily, you know, trade moustache stories with him, but that wouldn't hurt. But I'd love to have a beer with him and maybe mud wrestle after.
That would be fun. I was going to ask if you had ever actually met him.
So. No, I never have. But you can be certain that he's going to play my father sooner or later. If I have a say about anything, Tom Selleck will be my father. I'm not altogether certain that he isn't my father even now. Yeah.
Well. Speaking of your father and your family, and this brings us a little bit back to Saving Hope, and tell me if I'm keeping you too long, because I don't want you to be late for your guests. But I know your family is, a lot of them are in the medical profession and everything, and I just recently heard on another interview you did that you have an ancestor that is famous for his pioneering work in plastic surgery.
Mm-hmm. He was the first plastic surgeon. His name is Sir Harold Gillies. Now anything that comes out of my mouth sounds like it's bullshit, and it's not. He was the first plastic surgeon. He was basically men were returning from the First World War, and their faces were annihilated. It was trench warfare, so from shrapnel and bullets and all of the ghastly things that accompany, you know. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of that kind of violence and situation, that, you know, was men were returning looking like zombies. It was forget the, you know, the turmoil of the pain itself. Like, there's also the, you know, the psychological adjustment when people were literally returning with their jaw missing or their nose missing or their face, you know, their eyes, and returning to their loved ones having just fought for king and country, you know. So he performed the very first skin graft. He was the first plastic surgeon to try and rebuild noses. He built jaws. He built mouths. I've seen his original medical books, which my family owns. We have his books,
wow.
They're some of the most gruesome studies of the human face and body that I've ever seen in my life. Which, of course, as you can imagine, when you're 8 or 9 years old, are the most morbidly fascinating things on earth. And, you know, and so we were in a lot of trouble for sort of flipping, by the way, quite sort of irreverently through these antiques and kind of like in the medical profession, they'd be considered kind of like, you know, the Magna Carta. And we were just sort of randomly tossing them around, my brother and I going, ah, look at this face, this is crazy, you know, with no sort of empathy whatsoever for the people. But it's quite dazzling what he did, and he did it. He was a great man, and he's, and I still go into offices, to medical offices here in the States and in Canada, and I'll say, oh, my name's Daniel Gillies, and they'll be like, oh, are you Sir Harold's, you know, you're at all related to Sir Harold, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, he was knighted. I'm like, yeah, he was. He's my great, 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 great grandfather. No, my great, great, great grandfather. On my father's side, obviously. And so, yeah.
That is really amazing.
Yeah, it's tremendous. You know, on top of that, you know, my uncle's a doctor. My aunt was a nurse. My uncle's several of my a couple of my aunts were nurses. On both sides of the family, my mother was a nurse, my father's a doctor, my sister's a nurse. It's just like, it's just a very medical family. I had no interest in that stuff at all. I don't really like to know about the inner workings of the human body. It creates a sense of sort of fragility, I guess, in me. I it starts to make me, not queasy, but certainly anxious about how easily we can go. You know, there really are a lot of diseases that can take a person. It's a miracle,
yeah,
that we're around.
It really is. When like you said, you think about how fragile the human body is, and
absolutely,
how many ways there are to get hurt or die or anything. It's kind of scary. Thank goodness there are people out there who do want to pursue the medical profession to help the rest of us.
Absolutely. They're heroes. Those guys are superheroes.
Yes, they are. Well, I know you did a hero act just recently. You went and donated blood for the Red Cross.
That's not a hero act. That's a guy. That's an actor taking an afternoon to go and put a needle in his arm. It's the opposite of being a hero. But thank you very much for deeming act of heroism. It's very, very sweet and charming of you. But people should give blood. I'm made a decision now. I'm going to do that at least once a year, because, man, do they need blood, especially with all those motorcycles out there in the world. They need lots of blood.
Mm. Well, you may say it's not an act of a hero, but really it is, because, I mean, you don't know. You could have saved someone's life.
Well, I hope so. You know, one thing's for sure, whoever experiences and enjoys my blood is going to feel just a little bit high for a little while. I they won't know why. They'll be rambling stupid, nonsensical nothings. And hey, did you guys hear that John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John just did a Christmas, like, thing together? They did, like, a Christmas, I guess, like, a video or something together. And apparently it's amazing. Like, that we should all be watching it. That it's just, like, one of the funniest things maybe in our young lives. Well, I'm not young anymore, but in your young lives and my lives. So, but I should watch, I'm just looking it up online right now, John Travolta, Olivia Newton-John Christmas special. Anyway, I'm going to shut this, but apparently it might be one of the greatest comedies of 2012.
Oh, well, you'll have to tweet the link later so we can all enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, I mean, I've got, you know I could talk to you forever, but I, like I said, I don't want to keep you if you need to get to getting ready for your guests.
Just give me, I'll give you, let's call it a day in 15 minutes. Is that okay?
Okay, that's great.
Cool.
Sounds good to me. Okay, well, you know, you were saying that when you have time off like this, you like to write.
Mm-hmm.
So Elijah's off on these jaunts. He disappears for months at a time, goes off on his own, and God only knows what he's doing. So here's a chance for you to use your imagination. I know, it's kind of scary, but what do you think Elijah does when he goes off on these little solo jaunts?
He goes whoring. I think that I imagine he just loves, I think he goes to Panama. I think he has a penchant for cocaine. I think he likes gambling. I think he likes dog fighting. I'm not talking about like, hopefully this dog will triumph over the other. I'm talking some fucking Michael Vick shit. He's savage.
Yeah.
No, trust me. I don't agree with Elijah. I don't condone any of this behavior, but I know this is what he gets up to. I mean, Julie Fleck and I have discussed it endlessly. He loves prostitutes. He has a weird thing. For Panamanian prostitutes, I don't know what that is. I don't know when that develops. Perhaps somewhere during, the early settlement of the Americas. Somehow he found like Incan women or whatever. I don't know. I don't ask me about his depravity. I'm not responsible for his depravity. This is just what he does. I'm a witness, to this stuff. I know he enjoys stealing great art and then, painting false mustaches on faces and then, and returning them sort of upside down or sometimes he'll throw glitter on, he loves stealing things and putting them back. It seems that's one of his, Julie and I were in talks to make a spinoff about that alone, actually, at one certain point. I think he's a designer in many ways of women's clothing. I think he likes short shorts. He's done a whole range of kind of sunglasses that also that double as kind of a candy, I guess. In Europe, it's really popular. Well, in Japan, it's really popular. So not Europe. And now in Korea, they've just opened a line in Korea. But he does it all under alternative names. But I think he's a splendid rainbow trout fisherman. I also think he teaches hip hop to inner city kids.
Yeah.
He does. I think he does that twice a week. But he's got a real. He's an incredible hip hop dancer. Weirdly enough, he's a vegetarian. Like doesn't so. But he.
How can he be a vegetarian and be a vampire?
Well, that's the thing. When have you ever seen Elijah dig his neck and dig his teeth into the neck of another character on the show?
Never. That's
never.
One of the big questions. When are we going to see Elijah's vampire?
He's not drinking blood out of those bags. He's drinking some of the. It's the sort of a condensed raspberry configuration that he's made out of the candy sunglasses that he makes for the kids in Korea. He just microwaves it or whatever and puts it in the bag. He likes the feeling of the bags. It's a processed sugar, but for some reason it provides him with some degree of nourishment. I think he puts kombucha and kind of a kale mix in there as well, so he has some degree of sustenance. But he's a busy guy. I think he's really good friends with Ralph Fiennes. He and Ralph Fiennes like to. I think they at one point in their history together they both threw javelin together. I think it was just on a field on one of on the many acres of one of Rafe's, farms outside of London, but they throw a javelin. I don't know whether they have targets or anything, but he's a busy fellow.
Sounds like it. I guess, with all these centuries of time, he's had a chance to really perfect a lot of different skills.
Absolutely. He's really living it up. He's spending as much time away from Mystic Falls. I think in one of his first lines, and in the first episode that he appeared in, I think he says something like, when you brought me to this armpit of civilization, like he really means it. Like he's not, Mick Jagger once called the city called Invercargill in the south of New Zealand. He called it the asshole of the world. And it was the first city where I remember having a home in New Zealand. And I remember that Mick Jagger had come to town and called my hometown the asshole of the world. I think that in some ways, you know, Elijah has the same feeling about Mystic Falls if he wasn't so sort of smitten with Elena. I think he's definitely got his eye on that. I don't know why, what it is, because I personally don't. I don't know what that is. But Elijah loves Elena.
So this whole noble vampire persona, though, that's put out there is just totally bogus.
Oh no, it's 100% bullshit. I mean, he's made billions of dollars at the expense of drug addicts. I mean, he's literally. I mean, he did a lot of. He does more sort of over the counter narcotics now, selling mostly sort of Adderall, Ritalin, and kind of you know, just sort of augmented drug sources. But he's certainly. There was a time when he was responsible for, you know, some of the, you know, the largest quantities of narco trafficking in, you know, North and South America. He loves weed. I don't smoke. I don't smoke weed. I think it's abhorrent. I can't do it. I don't even know how. I wouldn't even know what end of a joint to put in my mouth. But Elijah is constantly sort of stoned. Look at him on the show. He looks a little bit high if you think about it. You know. If you wonder, you know, he's high. I think somewhere in Elijah's brain, the Jimi Hendrix version of All Along the Watchtower is always playing. I'd say Purple Haze, but that's a little cliche.
Well, I hope Julie doesn't get upset with us for outing this hidden side of Elijah.
Oh, Elijah, he's a busy, busy ancient vampire.
In more ways than one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. So, on your bucket list, I know you said that someday you do want to meet Tom Selleck, so that's one thing that I know is on there. What else is on your bucket list? What's something that you really want to accomplish?
Well, I guess I just want to make more movies, you know. I think it's a privilege to be able to make a movie. It's also incredibly difficult. But I think I just want to make more films and say something back to, I'm very grateful to be alive, you know. And I think I just want to say thank you back to the universe with movies. Some people might argue that my movies are like a fuck you rather than a thank you, but hopefully it's not interpreted that way. I look at it as an act of gratitude.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did such an amazing job with Broken Kingdom, so
thank you so much.
Look very much forward to anything else that you put out there. Are you going to put parts for yourself in these movies?
Only the naked ones, and frankly, and only if they're female. I can't see myself doing anything else. But that's the only way I can direct myself as a naked, obese Korean woman in her late 60s. I think that's the next role. I mean, I'm really going Christian Bale on this one.
Well, definitely be interested in that one.
Perfect.
Okay, well, I don't want to keep you any longer. I don't want you to have to rush and be late for getting ready for your guest. But...
Well, look, thank you very much for having me. And I'm sorry if there was any confusion in the beginning. I sincerely was trying to get through and not having the greatest luck. But thanks very much for having me. I love the VR. Thank you very much for having me, and I look forward to talking to you guys again.
Okay, well, before you go, if you could make a little shout out for the VRO. You know, we do this at the end of every interview.
Didn't I just give the VRO a shout out? What do you think I just did, Lynn? How dare you? What, if you took that as a soundbite, I just want to say that I love you all at the VRO. How does it get any better than that? I just did. All right. You want to gild this lily? Perfect. What a right. We had this wonderful time. We were having this wonderful time. All right. Now, what's my shout out? What do I specifically say?
You just say your name and you can throw in Broken Kingdom and Saving Hope and whatever you want to in there, but especially Broken Kingdom, because I mean that was our main focus on this talk tonight. And then the VR.
You know, you haven't given me any. Do you realize, if I played back to you what you just said to me, there's zero instruction in that. There's like literally nothing that you just say. You talk about Broken Kingdom and you know, I'm like, what was that? This is not articulate. I'll try and take over for you. I think we were trying to look. First of all, thank you very much also too for letting me speak about Broken Kingdom on this. This has been really great. If any of you guys out there want to go and see this film, you ought to, because it's really a very special film, and there's some really lovely performances in it. Most of them are done by Rachel, but you got to see it. It's on www.brokenkingdomfilm.com, and it's a really touching, special little movie, and I think it's a real testament to the fact that you don't need millions of dollars in order to take and tell a really special story, you know, through cinema. Also, I just want to say a big shout out to the VRO. Thank you so much for having me as your guest once again. I can't wait to come back and chat with you guys again soon. You are lovely.
Okay, that'll work.
Jeez, that'll work. Don't sound so thrilled. That'll work. All right. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint.
All right.
Well, yeah, I know where I'm wonderful. Kind of. That was like the sound of one golf clap, one very lonely golf clap taking place in a car park about 8 miles from here. All right. Thank you so much, you guys.
Daniel,
I'll talk to you soon.
You know I love you. Thank you very much for coming on tonight.
No problem. Talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Good night.
I don't know how you kept it. Who kept it together on that, Lynn? Number one. And number two, why? You really browbeat him into that last sound clip.
He wouldn't say, "This is Daniel Gillies."
No, he wouldn't. But it's okay. You know what? It's fine. Anytime he comes on again, he really doesn't have to do the sound clip anymore because we already have an original of his saying that. But, I'm definitely going to tell Amy to go back into the episode, and if she's not laughing too hard, to pull the section where he basically says that he loves the VRO, because that was awesome.
Yeah.
But you're
going
to have to contact him back and let him know, like, look, I was just a little nervous, and I lost it at the end.
I was just trying to follow instructions, that's all. He said, tell him to say this, and I was trying to get him to say that. But, hey, what he said was wonderful, so it's all good.
I'm surprised she asked you to do that, but because she hates to do that herself. She would make me do it. So I think you've just been hazed, my dear. But...
Well, and he didn't let me get away with it either.
No, he was just drawing it out. But you definitely, I hope he knows that we absolutely love having him on. And I was telling you in the chat, a private chat, that I could listen to him all day. But I am really glad that I was not the one doing the interview, because I would have been giggling through the whole thing.
Well, I know I'm going to be on there giggling through a lot of it, because he is hilarious. So much fun.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys like
man.
Rob Prago and Matt Davis, where you just ask a question and then you sit back for a half hour while they answer it, because that's
nice.
My favorite interview, when they just do the interview themselves.
Mm-hmm.
like when you get Rob, when you get Rob, and I don't know if you've ever met Kelly, what's his name, McClung, in person, but the two of them together, you basically ask one question for the entire interview, and they'll go off on their own tangent for the next hour and a half. So.
That's awesome. I love, love, love talking to him. And, yeah, he definitely takes the ball and runs with it, and that's wonderful. Love it. It's so much better than trying to pull, you know, answers out of someone.
Yeah, I think the only interview that I really had a hard time with was Eddie Furlong. And I was just like, yeah, this is the worst interview I've ever done. But I hope we can strike that from the record. Maybe we'll be able to edit that out. Nobody heard me say that. Anyway, I loved it. And thank you again, Lynn, for setting this all up. And thank you to Daniel Gillies for joining us for not only a half hour, but he actually spoke to us for over an hour. So that was awesome.
Yes, he is amazing. And I hope he manages to get his dinner ordered in time for his guests and doesn't have to make them wait for that, too.
Yes.
We don't want to be late for dinner.
That's okay. He'll just blame it all on you.
Yeah, probably. It's okay. I can take it. It's okay.
Well, that's awesome. And I was saying in the chat room before that, man, between Daniel Gillies and Matt Davis, they must have had the most absurd conversations on set.
Oh, God, I can only imagine.
Right? And I'd love to get Matt Davis on again to talk about The Cult that's coming up soon. So I'm going to try and get Amy on that. What?
I think it's February 19th is the premiere.
Yeah, February 19th is coming up. We were lucky enough to get a previewed copy of Cult from the CW and got a chance to take a look at it to see, you know, basically what the show was going to be about, some extended trailers and stuff like that. But it looks like an amazing show. I can't wait to see what's going to happen with it because it has an aspect of in the show itself is like a story within a story within a story. But it has to do with a group of people that are basically doing what a lot of people have been doing with Vampire Diaries and Twilight and Moonlight, where they're doing like role playing, like online role playing and figure out mysteries and on message boards and stuff like that. But that's actually built into Cult. So I'm interested to see how they're actually going to do that, if they're going to play into that whole social networking and create a game out of it for Cult. So I'm excited about that. I'm sorry, we went totally off topic, and that's my fault because I've just been crazy today. Do you know where Broken Kingdom is playing? I know you said you saw it, but I'm obviously nowhere near you. Do you know if it's playing in the East Coast? On the East Coast?
It's online. I've got the website listed right there in the little paragraph blurb up there where we talk about Daniel up there at the top.
Okay.
It's not in theaters or anything. It is online, and it is live streaming or downloadable worldwide. So, you know, people who tweet saying, oh, can I see it in whatever, Timbuktu, you know, yes. Anywhere that has the internet, you can go to this website and live stream both films, Kingdom Come and Broken Kingdom, or you can download them and keep them forever on your computer. So, you know, burn them to a DVD, and they're yours forever. And it's only $5 a piece or $8 for both of them. So you can't beat that. That's cheaper than a theater for two movies.
Right, exactly. And, again, that's www.brokenthekingdomfilm.com for people who have listened to this interview and who have, for some reason, missed the intro. But it's definitely worth going to check out. I will be looking for that. As soon as I get some money, I will definitely, because I am beyond broke right now, as soon as I get some money, I will absolutely be downloading that film.
Yes, definitely need to do that and check it out. He's proud of it, and he has reason to be. It's an amazing film. really is.
When he was discussing it, it sounded very intriguing, and it didn't seem like and he doesn't seem like a fluff person either, but it didn't seem like a fluff film. It sounded like it had some very deep meaning behind it, that there was a thread of intellect that was going through the entire film, and it was very intriguing to hear about it from him personally. So I'm really glad that he was able to come on, that he was able to make it for, way under standard industry cost,
yeah,
and that it's doing so well. So that's awesome. Anyway, Ms. Lynn, it is time for us to say goodnight. I hope that everybody will join us tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the VRO. We will be recapping, Amy and Shelley and I will be recapping Arrow. And then later, Arrow, and then Amy and Shelley will be recapping Supernatural in the same show. And then at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Ashley and I will be recapping American Horror Story Asylum. So if you guys have liked this interview and would like to hear more of the VRO, feel free to check us out on www.thevro.com. You can follow us on Twitter, at the VRO on Twitter. And you can find us, of course, on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com, and I believe it's under the VRO. Thanks
awesome.
Again, Lynn.
Thank you, Jessica.
I will talk to you guys tomorrow.
Okay. Good night, and thank you for all your help, and good night to everybody out there and online.
Great. Thanks, Lynn. Talk to you soon.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Good night.